So it's navigating through the issues on both sides and finding that common ground between the two to help get someone over an injured worker over a hurdle. That's something they may be hanging on to. And it could be something as simple as an apology from an employer. It could be something far more deeper seated or deeper rooted than that. But sometimes it's as simple as that. And you know, sometimes the simplest of all solutions or the simplest of all ideas or solutions resolve the most complicated of all cases.
Welcome to It's Settled, the Ametros podcast. Each episode, we're going to dig into the humanity in workers' compensation and insurance claims, exploring the stories of injured people and those who support them, as well as the good work professionals are doing in the industry. And now, I invite you to join me, Sean Dean, General Counsel at Ametros and the host of It's Settled. Now, it's settled. Let's get on to the episode.
We finally have Greg Gitter on the podcast. My name is Sean Dean. I'm general counsel here at Ametros. I also hold double duty as host of the It's Settled Ametros podcast. And just full disclosure, I'm struggling a little bit with a chest cold, not COVID, tested yesterday, but I was not about to reschedule this with such a great guest. We had to because of some travel and scheduling and things like that before, but we're really excited to finally have Greg Gitter, who's president of Legacy Claim Solutions, on with us. And in my estimation, one of the greatest people that we have in the work comp and Medicare set aside industry, and just in general, one of my favorite people. So, Greg, really appreciate you being here and taking the time.
Hey, good morning, Sean. Thanks for having me. I'm glad we finally got here. Like you said, it took us a little bit to get here, but we're here now, and I'm looking forward to chatting. Likewise, it's always fun to spend some time talking with you, whether it's on a podcast or sitting in an airport sipping a cup of coffee, which we've had more than our fair share of.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, so it's funny you say airport. So one of my favorite stories about you. Let me back up even before that. You're such a great person. You're one of the only people I know always text me on Father's Day, always text me on Thanksgiving, always text me during the holidays. And you're just such a considerate person. And I think that's why you're so loved in the industry. But one of my favorite stories is about an airport. And this was shortly after the pandemic when, you know, everything was really, no pun intended, up in the air and no one knew what was going on. And I got a call from you, and I had known no one who was engaging in air travel at all. And I got a call from you about a case you were working on, that involved Ametros' services collaterally, but you were hopping on a plane to go to a mediation. I don't even recall where, but you were somewhere in the middle of the country, maybe. And it was just, it was amazing. And it's a testament to you and how dedicated you are to helping folks settle these very difficult cases, but you were out there flying at the height of the pandemic.
It's true. That's true. I was at the time I was living in San Diego, and it was a case in South Carolina that we had been working on for a couple of years, and had the opportunity to get together with this gentleman. And in fact, we actually wound up doing the mediation in two completely separate conference rooms on different floors. But nevertheless, it was important that we continue to move this forward. And the conversation you and I had flown from San Diego to Dulles, which is in Virginia, just outside of DC. And I was on my way between the two, and I needed some information from you all about and a question about CareGuard, about the product. And we got to talking, and you must have heard the background noise at the airport, because it asked me, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm flying out, and actually flew to the flight from Dulles to South Carolina. There were eight people on the airplane. six of which were flight attendants and such that were deadheading back to wherever they needed to be, me and one other passenger. So effectively, it was a charter jet that I wound up on to South Carolina. And the good news for really the claimant and the client, we ultimately got that case settled as a result of that, and a good result for everybody. It was a good result for the gentleman to be able to get on with his life, and a good result for the carrier to have that thing wrapped up.
And we were coming back from we were in New Orleans, headed different directions, but we Ubered over to the airport together, and we were having a really interesting conversation about your business, and I was asking a bunch of questions, and it was incredibly fascinating. We got to the airport, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Greg, you need to be on the podcast. I've known you for over a decade, and I love talking with you. So that's why we're here. But before we get into kind of what you're doing present day, the purpose of the podcast is. As we set up, is to typically tell stories about injured individuals and their journey post-injury and their life after settlement. But we also talk to people just like yourself who are in the workers' compensation industry, making a difference in some way. In your case, really helping to line up these settlements that probably wouldn't otherwise happen without your expertise and intervention. But I always ask the guests, how on earth did you get into workers' compensation? I was looking at your bio, but I was reading up on you this morning, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you had direct claims handling experience. That's how you got started. So when you were at, you know, in San Diego going to college, were you thinking, oh, I want to be a claims person, or did the industry come up and find you like it does many of us?
So it couldn't be further from the truth that I woke up dreaming about being a claims adjuster, a claims person one day. My older brother was an adjuster working for Liberty Mutual doing workers' compensation and liability. And I'd hear him and his buddies talking about it over a beer or two. And I thought, God, I don't know how anybody on earth could ever do that. And, you know, sure enough, it was time for me to sell the Volkswagen van, get a haircut, you know, be a grown up, buy a suit and all those good things. And I did, and a job came up and with a regional carrier in California. I applied, I got in the door and I could spit out just enough terms like temporary disability, total disability, partial disability, you know, indemnity, but I could spit out just enough insurance related terms to get somebody's attention and take me to the next level and let me take the typing test and the spelling test and all the other things came with it. And sure enough, they hired me and they threw a bundle of money at me, which in 1995 was a bundle. And off I went. Once you get in, it's hard to get out. And it's been a great run. I've had my share here, and ultimately now on to doing what we do now, which is kind of parallel or tangent to handling workers' compensation claims and really taking those cases that really the worst of the worst and some of the toughest cases out there and finding solutions and ways to settle them in creative ways and using all the tools that are available to us, you know, be it annuities, obviously MSAs are always a big part, but use of annuities, use of professional administration and the benefit or the asset that comes along with having somebody helping manage funds post settlement, things like that. Really, that's sort of, you know, coming along up in the industry as a youngster and seeing this niche or this need on these cases really was kind of what drove me to this point or got me to here.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So from 95, you know, you stood up the business in 05. So there was a good 10 years of direct claims experience. And I know you even like you did some marketing stuff, like you were really involved in claims. What led you to go, you know, gosh, there's something here. There's a missing piece. Was it seeing all these old dog claims sitting out there that weren't settling? Was it one case in particular? You know, what led you to realize that there was a niche there and an opportunity?
So, you know, it really was this kind of overarching view or perspective. My last, I'll say traditional job was with a small kind of boutique size or style TPA in San Diego. And as a manager, I was seeing cases that were being reported to excess carriers and we were reporting to them on a quarterly, a semi-annual, whatever it may be basis. And nothing was happening with the cases. They were sort of on a maintenance, just sort of, you know, continue to pay and those kinds of things. And I always looked at cases from the perspective of settlement. And one of the wisest people that I know in workers' compensation, an old boss of mine said, you know, the only good case is a settled case. And the only settled case is one that's got a full and final resolution to it. So I always had an eye toward that and had this driver passion toward negotiation of anything I could get my hands on. A friend wants to go buy a new car, they drag me to the dealership with them kind of thing. So it was always this kind of passion in me. And I recognized these cases that had, you know, had been either a specific traumatic injury, somebody falls from a roof, there's a burn or those kinds of things, or these kind of chronic cases that developed to the point where they fell into the lair of an excess carrier. And we were reporting onto them. And I thought, you know, there's got to be a way to settle these cases. And kind of the genesis of the idea or the concept of this started at that point. And, you know, the old story of, you know, the TPA is bought out by a larger TPA and, you know, there's the management heavy, so on and so forth. And that was the end of my stay with that third party administrator. And I got, after the day after I got laid off, I woke up with a bit of a hangover and same mortgage payment, same 6 month old son and same car payments. Said, you know what? I got this idea about going after these cases and trying to settle them, and thought, well, hey, you know, I know a few folks in the business. I know a couple of folks at some excess carriers reached out and said, hey, I've got an idea to take these cases, the worst of the worst, and see if there's a way to bring them to resolution, take the tools we've got available to us. And as things were coming along, particularly with Medicare, take the tools we had available to us and really go after settlement. And I had somebody who put a little faith in me and handed me five cases and said, don't call me until these are settled. And I settled the first five and I called him and he sent me five more and I settled three of those five and I'll never forget this. This was kind of one of these moments in a career. And he said to me, and this is a gentleman who's a few years older than me, said, kid, you're onto something. And I thought, kid, 30, whatever, five, six, whatever years old, kid, you're onto something. And off we went into this thing. And it was his, you know, kind of his vision and his willingness to take a chance on me and see the vision I saw to go after and try and settle these cases that really sort of evolved into the business that you see today.
The first time I had any exposure to you was at now Medicare Secondary Payer Network. At the time, it was called NAMSAP, a trade industry organization that both you and I are have been heavily involved with. But it was one of my first. I want to say it was 2010. 11, maybe a long time ago, too far back to be fresh in my mind. But what did stick out that entire annual conference was a talk that you gave. It was in Orlando. I do remember that. It was a talk that you gave on techniques, and claim attributes and types of injuries that you were, identifying that had potential for settlement. And at first, I'll be honest, I thought you were an attorney. And then I thought you were a physician. Afterwards we ended up talking and striking up a friendship. And it really stuck with me some of the severity at which some of these individuals sustain injuries. And it struck me that these are not easy cases. These are not the run of the mill, you know, lumbar spine industrial injuries that you see that are just a little bit of lost time. I mean, these are claims that are catastrophic, oftentimes involve really traumatic, life-altering injuries for these individuals. And I guess the question to you is, you know, what led you is this just part of these claims that are very difficult to settle? This is just an attribute that goes with that. They are oftentimes very severe injuries, or are these claims that you were picking to resolve? Or and then I guess I'm throwing a lot of questions at you, but what makes those cases so difficult to resolve? Is it apprehension on the part of the injured party? Is it just their such a high amount that it's hard for the parties to meet in the middle to find a settlement number?
You know, it's funny, Sean. You ran through a listing. As I say, I would say all of the above. That doesn't make for a good podcast. Really and truly, any one of those things can be the hurdle or the impediment to a settlement in a case like this. You know, we look at cases, you know, in the grand scheme, to kind of go back to sort of the beginning of your question, what kind of case fits? Well, we see cases that are an immediate traumatic event that changed somebody's life. They're working on the side of a freeway, get hit by a car, and they become a paraplegic or quadriplegic. Or someone who you know, starts off as a lumbar strain, they have a failed back surgery, they have a failed fusion, they wind up with a spinal cord stimulator or an intrathecal pump or things of that nature. And they become chronic type injuries where, you know, we went through the period of time with opioids, which isn't quite as bad as it used to be. But all of those things lead us to the path of these cases, regardless of whether it was an immediate traumatic event in a car accident or being struck by a vehicle, something like that, a fall, or it's an accumulation or a chronic type event. It's life-changing for that person, and the impact on them is profound. They've lost their income. They're relying on an insurance company to approve or disapprove things that they need, whether they believe they need them or not. It's a different story, but the law is what it is. So it's dramatically changed their life. A lot of times, an individual may be angry at their employer or the situation. They may be angry at the insurance company. Many times the carrier or the employer is restricted by jurisdictional constraints or restraints as to what the law does or doesn't allow them to do relative to these folks. So you have all of these things that go into the stew, and parties that have very different views or approaches on what they believe a value may be. So like I said, all of the things that you touched on are all things that are issues. So it's navigating through the issues on both sides and finding that common ground between the two to help get someone over an injured worker over a hurdle, that's something they may be hanging on to. And it could be something as simple as an apology from an employer. It could be something far more deeper seated or deeper rooted than that, but sometimes it's as simple as that. And you know, sometimes the simplest of all solutions or the simplest of all ideas or solutions resolve the most complicated of all cases.
Yeah. And I mean, you bring up a good point that every human being's different, that every injury is different. Therefore, every scenario in which you are embedded to help seek resolution is going to be completely different. So I guess with that, and I've heard, you know, I've heard you, you know, informally and both formally talk about certain claims that you've been a part of that you've helped resolve. Any ones you'd want to talk about? Any ones that sort of stick out that might be emblematic of some of these concepts that we've covered a little bit?
Sure. So one comes to mind, and this is one of my favorite stories to share and tell, because it brings about the explanation or definition behind the simplest of all things. So I had a case, we were in the middle of a negotiation and sitting in the room, all the parties are sitting in a room. It was a kind of an informal type arrangement in the claimant's attorney's office. And we're sitting and talking, and it was a gentleman that was injured, and his wife was there. And she was exceedingly angry and almost aggressive in the discussion. And this was a settlement that was somewhere north of $750,000. So a very, very large settlement. His wife was angry about everything. Everything we would say, she was upset about. And as we worked our way through, and I finally, you know, asked her the question. I said, "So, you know, what else is there? What other issues are there? What else is holding up us getting to the end?" And she finally revealed to me that during the course of the injury, the doctor had ordered a new bed for the claimant, and the carrier had provided it, and they had ordered and provided a king size bed, and they had previously had a queen size bed. So she had gone back and asked the adjuster to pay for a set of sheets for the bed, and the adjuster refused. "I'm not required to do so," et cetera, whatever the answer may have been. And she was mad about this, and this was holding her up. So I asked everybody to take a little break, and I went down the street and I bought a $100 gift card at one of the big box stores. I'm not sure if I should mention names, but at a big box store that sells sheets. And I came back to the mediation and I handed the card to her and I said, here, go buy a couple sets of sheets. I don't know. I don't manage those things in my own household, but I assume $100 will get a set, maybe two. And it solved the problem. And she looked at me almost kind of shocked. And I said, well, here, hopefully this helps to resolve the problem. And it's the point of, I guess, to this is to the story is a couple of things. Number one, it's a little bit of creativity. I recognized what the problem was and solved the problem over $100. And this was a $750,000+ settlement hanging in the balance over effectively a set of king size sheets, bed sheets. So, and it got her past this issue, you know, again, on behalf of her husband, but it got her past this issue that had been nagging at her, gnawing at her for a year since the bed was provided. So that kind of thing. And the defense attorney sort of looked at me sideways and I said, look, if the client doesn't reimburse me the $100, that's okay. You know, the bottom line is we got the case settled. And when I went back to the client and told them, of course, they were more than happy to reimburse the $100 that I spent on the gift card, because that was ultimately put over the top. But it's things, while you know, we say, well, something as simple as that, but to her, it wasn't that simple. It was logical. It made good sense. And it was what was standing in between resolving that case, you know, in between what was getting what it would take to get that case resolved.
I love everything about that story. I've heard you talk at length, going really deep into very complex, like medical conditions and interventions and treatment modalities. But I mean, we're talking here about humanity in workers' compensation and humanity in settlements and what's important to people and to their loved ones. You mentioned earlier about like sometimes it's so much as they want an apology or they want recognition that they feel that they've been wronged in some way. In this instance, it was pretty short money, $100 for, you know, a gift card at a big box store for sheets. That was important to her. So oftentimes I think that we view, you know, these very complex claims with all sorts of associated medical issues and high monetary value is requiring, you know, maybe interventions or techniques that are on a pretty big scale. And we're talking here about $100 gift card. So I think, you know, the point there is there's something that you picked up on there that other people weren't. So the point there is to people who are out there resolving claims or handling claims or interfacing with injured parties or their loved ones is to not forget the human aspect. And sometimes I guess a little goes an incredibly long way. I want you to talk a little bit about, Greg, if you would, typical apprehensions that an injured individual has when they're on the precipice of settling. And they've been in the throes of the work comp ecosystem that has nurse case managers and adjusters and likely an attorney that's representing them, and the overarching workers' compensation system where there's ultimately going to be an ALJ who's, you know, in kind of almost a parental way, looking out for their best interests. And they're, you know, they settle a case and it's literally like they're taken care of one day and the next they're kind of on their own. They might have a pile of cash, but they might not have someone there. So what are some trepidations that you find that injured parties and their loved ones have? And what are some ways that you talk through with them about those things? Because I know you're in the throes of it. Like, you became a Medicare set-aside expert a long time ago because you realized, okay, this is going to be something that's going to be required. So I need to know this stuff.
That's
that a little bit.
That's a great point, because there's such a huge element to MSP compliance and doing what we need to do and do the right thing by Medicare as part of this process. And it's the education first it was my education to know and understand, you know, going through training and education to be able to initially to peek behind the shower curtain and sort of see what how CMS looks at the world. But ultimately, the asset or benefit that it brings to us is to be able to share that knowledge and education and apply it to settlements. And really to make sure that somebody understands that we're not going to leave them out on an island if they're on Medicare or SSDI. We're not just leaving them on an island. There's a fund that's set up and it's set up for a purpose and educating them what's included, how it works, how it functions, how it interplays with Medicare should that fund ever run out. But it's helping them to bring them. One of the biggest things that we see is to bring them the freedom and control back in their life, because many, many times the workers' compensation system, for as much as there is this sort of parental role to it, as you point out, where there's, you know, nurse case managers and folks looking out for them, the parent, you know, controls the amount of screen time is a good analogy to it. They're controlling what they can and can't do. And a lot of times these folks just want control back. So it's being able to give them the control over being able to go to the doctor when they want to, not having to ask permission to get additional physical therapy from anybody but their doctor, to get their prescriptions filled at the pharmacy of their choice. These little things are important to these folks. And a lot of times giving them back that control is a big part of this, is giving them control over money and whether that's a lump sum of cash because that's the best thing for them, or it's a combination of cash and annuities where there's a stream of income that's coming to them, whatever it may be, something, setting up a college fund for a child, setting up something for grandkids. I was working on a case with a gentleman yesterday who wants to make sure his grandkids are taken care of. So we're taking some of the settlement money and we're setting up a series of annuities so that when his grandchildren reach age 18, there'll be something for them. Grandpa has set them up. You know, one of them is 6 months old. So it'll be 17 and a half years before she sees this. But nevertheless, he's done something to set her up for her future out of his settlement. So that's important to him. But many times, again, it's control for these folks. And giving them that control is a big deal. And along with that comes responsibility. And that means that if they've got a Medicare set aside, for example, that it needs to be managed properly. And I tell folks, Sean, I can't tell you how often I say this, I'm blue in the face. I explain to people, I do this all day, every day. I have my nose in a Medicare set aside on a regular basis. I have training. I have some level of expertise in these things, and I would never administer my own. And I always encourage them to use professional administration, to use something like one of the Mitros products, be it CareGuard or one of the others, to use this product as an advantage, as a tool for them. It's exceedingly inexpensive. There's the responsibilities taken on for the proper payment of bills, the reporting to Medicare, all the things that go into that. Again, frankly, I say to them, look, I wouldn't let my mom or my wife or maybe my brother I've let do, but I'm kidding. I wouldn't let anybody close to me do this because it is so complicated. It's such a complicated thing. And I encourage them, again, as one of the many tools we have available, I encourage them to use this and explain you're not giving up control. In fact, you're wrestling control back to your medical care, as I described in these different ways, but somebody else is managing the more complicated parts of this for you so that you can continue on the course of treatment. As you mentioned, in the cases we see, they're not back strains and knee strains. At least they've evolved well beyond if they were. And now we've got folks that have a significant need for medical care. These aren't $25,000 MSAs where, you know, maybe the person doesn't use it. These are $200,000-$300,000 or more MSAs where these folks have a need for ongoing care. So they really, it's very much, there is a complicating factor that comes with it. If it was a bill or two a year they were having to pay, maybe that wouldn't be so bad. But in a situation like this, you know, that they're having to deal with physical therapy bills, possible surgery bills, and things of that nature, it just makes good sense to use the tools available so they've got the control to decide on that medical treatment and to go to the doctor as they choose, for example, but somebody else is helping them manage it post-settlement. And it's to alleviate some of those fears and concerns.
I want to switch gears a little bit, and I hope this isn't too personal a topic, but you know, I found out that a couple years ago that you were involved in an injury, a personal injury, not related to the fault of, you know, any third party, but I'd like it if you would to walk the viewers through what happened to you, and then post injury, did that change your viewpoint, given that this is the population of people that you work with, for which, you know, you went through something very similar, if you don't mind, and sorry to put you on the spot, Greg.
I don't mind at all. I have much to my wife's chagrin, I have kind of taken this and put a humorous spin on the story. Though not funny, I've tried to put a humorous spin to it. So on July 5th of 2020, I remember the date because it was after July 4th. I had a neighbor on July 4th who called me and was complaining about a tree that was hanging over his fence and onto his property and dropping leaves and so on and so forth. And I decided on July 5th that I would go up and trim that tree and take a limb off. And I was up on a extension ladder. It's an 18-foot extension ladder. I was at the top of the extension ladder with a chainsaw. And when I cut the limb, the trunk snapped back, dumped me off the ladder, and I fell, give or take 20 feet, and landed on dirt, unfortunately, and landed in such a way that I hurt myself, but not too terribly bad, I suppose, in the grand scheme. I add some humor to it because that's maybe how my coping mechanism and how I deal with it. But my first, you know, response when first person I recall seeing was a paramedic standing over me and asking me how I felt. And I said, I'm fine. How are you? And he, you know, proceeded to have a good laugh about that because how could you possibly be fine after falling 20 plus feet? Fast forward to my visit to the emergency room where I came out of a CT scan with the emergency room doctor standing over me, and he advised me that I was extremely lucky that I had some broken bones and some things had happened, but the CT scan of my head was negative, to which I responded, apparently my father was right all those years ago, there is nothing between my ears. So as you can imagine, here's me laying on a gurney and on a backboard and a physician standing over me, and we're laughing hysterically as I'm being wheeled through the emergency room. Needless to say, and all humor aside, I actually broke 10 bones and my right shoulder came apart. But I was fortunate. I was extremely fortunate that I fell 20-ish feet from a ladder.
With a chainsaw.
With a running chainsaw. So the chainsaw, the ladder, the limb, and everything else that came down somehow completely missed me. And my only injuries were from deceleration trauma when I hit the ground. So it was 6 ribs, 4 vertebrae that I fractured. And then, of course, my shoulder, which ultimately required surgery. My son described the noises that I made when I got home as something like a moose that was dying because moving was rather painful. Nevertheless, I recovered from my injuries. And again, fortunately, I've seen cases of people that fell a third the distance that I did and had a completely different outcome that are paraplegics and quadriplegics and all these things. So I'm incredibly fortunate. I certainly don't make light of falls and injuries, those of anybody but myself, of course, but I don't make light of any of that. But it is absolutely I'm fortunate, and it gave me perspective to take pause and say, hey, you know, what we do is helpful for individuals, and it's to help them kind of, you know, move on to the next stage, excuse me, but they weren't as fortunate. Their injuries wound up resulting in permanent injuries, quadriplegia, paraplegia, those kinds of things, the loss of limbs. So it very much gave me some perspective on how they see the world, the things they experienced and what they went through. And certainly gives me the ability to be more empathetic perhaps than I was before to what's going on. And not so that I wasn't, because again, I understand the injury, but to be able to take just even another step further back from the absolute, just this is just a piece of paper, you know, a stack of paper that's medical reports and letters, but there's a human being on the other side. And that's equally as important. You know, obviously working with insurance companies and clients and things of that nature, you know, their objective is to get to a finite exposure, to a finite cost associated with a case. Generally speaking, in cases like this, carriers are fairly reasonable or fair when it comes to settlements of this nature, understanding that their exposure is great. It's a very, very large number, and finding these creative solutions to bring resolution to cases like this, and bringing us to them to help find that solution as a third party, and resulting in, you know, it's a benefit to everybody. The carrier is going to end up with savings with reserve takedown and things of that nature. The injured worker claimant's going to wind up out of the workers' compensation system. And I tell people all the time, getting out of this system isn't going to heal your spine. It's not going to restore a limb. It's not going to bring any of those things back. But the burden, the mental burden that's lifted, again, you getting the control back, you being able to close this chapter of the book in your life and move forward into the next chapter, whatever it may be. I joke, I'm on the holiday card list for quite a few folks I've settled claims for over the years. And in the beginning, I didn't really understand. And it was pointed out to me, somebody said, you know, hey, you've changed their life. And I've had people call and just say, hey, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years later, hey, thanks. Thanks for what? Thanks for getting me out of that system and away from that and helping me move on to the next stage. And it's impactful when being able to look back at that point. It's impactful to say, hey, wow, it really did change somebody's life in a really positive way, and got them to help them move on to that next stage and pay attention to the other things in their life that are important as well.
I don't know that I couldn't end it on a more perfect note with that last few minutes. That's amazing. I mean, you certainly are a leader in the workers' compensation industry that's helping a tremendous amount of people, including insurance claims payers, injured workers and their representatives, and collaterally their family members. Another thing about you, Greg, is you're always willing to share information. I mean, you're always out there. I don't know how many days a year you're on the road, but not only are you, you know, running a business doing this stuff, but you're always willing to give your time to provide education, whether it's in a talk or a seminar or sitting down or taking someone aside and talking about claims resolution techniques. So you really give back too, and I appreciate that about you. But you're one of the best, Greg, and it's settled. You're on the podcast. You're with us, and we appreciate everything you do and that your company does and the partnership that we have, and love to have you back on the podcast at some other point. Just thank you so much, Greg.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity, Sean. Again, if anybody, to your point, if anybody has questions, concerns, comments, anything, I'm always happy to help. Please feel free to share my email address or phone number. I'm always happy to jump in and answer any questions. And thank you for the opportunity. I'm sorry it took us so long to get together on this thing, but hey, here we are. And I'd love to come back someday and share some more stories with you.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of It's Settled, the Ametros podcast. For more information and episodes, you can visit us at our website at ametros.com. That's ametros.com. Or head over to iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. We hope you enjoyed this episode and look forward to sharing more stories of people overcoming their workplace accidents and bodily injury claims and those who are working hard to make a difference for them. So it's settled. We'll see you next time.